It's the Beckler and Shauna podcast, your daily download of X92.9's X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
It's Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. I'm Beckler.
I'm Shauna.
And our friend Ronan is in studio. Hey, Ronan.
Hello.
Ronan, you're how old now?
7.
7 years old, and you're off school this week.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad are just hanging out?
Yep.
What have you guys been up to?
We've been up to watching movies.
Nice.
At my granddad's and...
What are you into these days? I know last time we talked to you, you were into Pokemon and Minecraft and still doing that?
Yep, and Roblox.
And now. Roblox. Yeah, my boys are all over that too.
That's pretty cool.
Anybody you want to give a shout out to, Ronan?
My dad.
Nice. What's your dad's name?
Scott.
Wicked.
And your mom? And your mom too?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's your mom's name?
Lindsay.
Lindsay. Well,
so
hello
Lindsay
to Scott and
Scott
Lindsay.
And Ronan. And you're headed to, where are you going after this?
The Muir exhibit.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be really cool. I haven't been yet.
We walked past that the other day at the mall, and I haven't been either, but another guy at the station here was telling us that it's super cool.
Yeah, that'll be really fun.
You'll have to report back to us on how that was.
Why have you not been there?
That's a darn good question,
it's a great
Ronan.
Question, Ronan.
Yeah. We'll have to get... We should come with you. Maybe we'll do that.
Well, cool. Thank you for stopping by today, Ronan.
Yeah, that's awesome, Ronan.
On today's show, there's a heritage moment at the very end because it's Wednesday. This is about one of the strangest attractions in Alberta. We also did career day today. Normally, it's on Tuesday, but we have to be kind of flexible depending on when our interview guests are available. So we chatted with a friend of ours who is a concert promoter. If you've ever wondered about the behind-the-scenes world of booking concerts... booking live shows. This friend has all the info for you. We'll talk a bit about the Han Dong trial that's going on right now. A friend of the show submitted some beats that I think you'll enjoy. We cracked up about this. Shauna's friends are in university and they live in just, like, this is next level frat house stuff. I've never heard of anything like this before. All that and more after your Out of Context clip.
I've seen reports about that.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I was watching the Blue Jays game the other day, and they were talking about Justin Turner, who is just bucking Pats kind of guy.
He's a Blue Jay now, hey?
He's a Blue Jay now.
He played for the Red Sox last year, but I forgot he's a Blue Jay now.
Yeah. And if you don't know who he is, he's a big ginger, good steak ass on him. And
good beard, thick body,
for sure. And that is the type of that Blue Jays commentators Buck and Pat love. But he said something that made me laugh pretty hard, so I just wanted to play this for you, okay?
Yeah, leadership is about you playing the game the way you think you should, and everybody else will take note of it, and Turner's done that for a long time, and when he walked in the locker room this spring, everybody kind of take note, hey, we got a dude now, man, we got a dude, and he certainly has lived up to that role.
We got a dude
now,
man.
We got a dude now, man. Everyone in the locker room knew it.
What the hell does that mean, Buck? We got a dude now, man. We got a dude. Like...
Look at this here. I've seen lots of guys come through the baseball clubhouse. I've seen lots of guys, lots of men, lots of boys, too. But this here's a dude. This right here's a dude.
I can't even tell the difference between
but
you and him.
Turner's done that for a long time. And when he walked in the locker room this spring, everybody kind of take note. Hey, we got a dude
that's
now,
a
man.
Dude right
we got
there.
A dude now,
look at that
man.
Body. That's a dude. Look at the ass on that
look
guy.
At that
I've seen
ass
lots of guys.
Body.
Lots of naked
Turner's
guys.
Turner's done that for a long
time. Turner's done that
that's
for
a dude. That Justin
a
Turner?
Dude.
That's a dude right there.
Note of it. And Turner's done that.
And he still sounds like he has marbles in his mouth, okay?
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
At what age is it okay to start lifting weights?
Because
when I was growing up, the conventional wisdom was
whenever
that,
you can, Beckler, just get in. Yeah.
They used to say not to start weight training before 14.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, fitness rules are always changing,
it's
and there's
true.
Always new research, and you can always find someone who argues against it. So I was curious to know if that's still the recommendation. So I went looking yesterday, and the first article I found was from the Mayo Clinic, which is, I think, a fairly respected resource on all things to do with the body.
I always wonder about that. I don't really know, but good. Good to know it's reputable.
Because Mayo Clinic articles always come up at the top
they
of your search,
do.
Right?
Yeah.
When you're searching health stuff. And this article said that when done correctly, weight training can begin around 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
Which I found very surprising. That's pretty young.
That seems young.
I mean, and I was thinking about my own boys, because they're both into sports.
Yep.
And they've, like, they're used to going to the gym, right? Since they were babies,
yep.
They have come to the gym with us and like gone to the childcare center and stuff. So like the gym is already
very familiar for them.
Yeah. A part of their routine. They wouldn't be, I don't think, intimidated in the gym or anything. So I was like, it could be something fun to share with them when they're old enough, you know?
Yeah.
One of my biggest regrets is that I didn't start working out earlier. Like in my early 20s, I didn't care. I kind of thought lifting weights was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was entirely driven by vanity.
Yep.
And if I could go back, I would have started working out in high school and started taking, you know, fitness more seriously like that, because I underestimated like the benefits that come from, you know, just the confidence that you get.
Totally.
And the way you feel after you work out and stuff.
Yeah.
So actually when McKenna and I started dating, she described my body type as cheese string.
Yeah.
So she said I was a cheese string when we first met.
I mean, bean pole, cheese string, they're all very similar. That's a good one, though. I like that. Wacky inflatable man.
The cheese string, you know, where you peel the top and he's got that crazy hair?
Yeah.
That was kind of what I looked like, I guess.
Okay, cool. Did you have spiky hair, too?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no.
I said long hair. So I read a little further in this article, and it said, don't confuse strength training with weightlifting, bodybuilding, or powerlifting.
Right.
Trying to build big muscles can put too much strain on young muscles, tendons, and areas of cartilage that haven't yet turned to bone, called growth plates.
Okay, so gentle weightlifting. I mean, at that point, you should just take some cans of soup, you know, pick them up and put them back down again. That's probably good.
Start
with the soup workout and then build up from there.
You're lifting soup. And if you stick with your soup
we'll get you to water jugs after that.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I was killing myself because a friend of mine lives with a couple roommates right now, and they currently have a bat problem. So
A bat problem.
They're all finishing up school and they live in like a classic college frat house kind of deal. But they're spending hardly any money, so they're all cool with it. And the latest is that they have a whole bunch of bats, like just bats flying around the house. Just
like how many bats are we talking? Because like, my opinion, one bat is way too many bats.
No, according to them, there are several bats that are consistently flying around. Like they have a serious bat problem.
That sounds awful.
So they've decided to make a game of it. So whoever catches the most bats gets reduced rent. So they actually,
come on.
They have this chart up on the fridge and it's called the batting average. So it's got everybody's batting average up there, and they actually have bat stickers. So if you catch a bat, you get a bat sticker. And by the end of the month, whoever has the most bats caught, then they get reduced rent.
That is the most like college student thing I've ever heard.
This is what I said. I heard the story and I'm like, this is the most frat boy thing I have heard in years. The batting average.
So like, how many bats is the leading batter?
Okay, so here's the thing. They have a cat, and the cat is also up on the chart. And the cat's winning.
The cat's winning, isn't
it? So the cat has 6 or 7 bats, I forget, something like that. So the cat's up there significantly.
That's too many bats,
that's
man.
So many bats.
Oh. I've had like mice in the house before years and years ago, and that sucks.
Yes.
Bats is so much worse
because they go for your hair. Like they go for you. They don't. They're not afraid of you.
Especially your hair.
Oh my God! They'd be stuck in there.
The bats would be like, "Yeah, that's what I'm all about, right there."
Like, I would just be embracing it. I'd be like, "They live there now. It's fine."
Like they're airborne mice, basically.
Oh,
they have that tactical aerial advantage over you.
Yep. Yeah. So my friend is actually in second place, though. He's winning, so he might get reduced rent. And he said the reason that he's winning is because he takes the cat and he uses it as bat radar.
So when the cat's alert to something,
he picks up the cat and he puts it in front of him and just walks around the house. And when the cat starts freaking out, he knows there's a bat nearby.
Man, I don't know if there's like... Like you could give me free rent and I don't think I would want to live with the bats.
No,
you know?
I would you'd definitely.
You take free rent?
I'd handle the bats.
And
I
bats?
Would. Yep. I'd take my cat. Might have the best batting average there. Oh,
see,
yeah.
This place is cheap, but there's a catch.
There's
of bats
everywhere.
Lots and lots of bats.
Lots of bats.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
We got messages from a few people who wanted to know if your friends are actually killing the bats, Shauna.
Not killing them, shooing them out.
The cat's killing them, I'm sure.
I don't think
cats
the cat
not. Is, what?
I don't think the cat's killing him.
Cats.
I should. I
domestic
didn't ask
killers.
Them. Hmm. I guess maybe the cat is.
Is the cat trapping them in Tupperware and releasing them outside?
I actually didn't ask that question. I don't know. I thought that the cat just kind of like, because cats will play with it, so then you can scoop them up after the cat.
They'll play with them to torture them before they kill them.
Right. But for example, like when a cat has a like a mouse or something, when we were growing up with cats, we would get the mouse out of the cats before they killed it, if you know, because it's disgusting. But yeah, I'll have to ask. That's a damn good question. I just assumed they weren't, but you're right. The bats are. I know they aren't. They're shooing the bats out of the house is what they're doing, but they're still counting that as a catch.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the same bats coming back in.
It might be.
I wonder if they have a, is it a nest? A roost?
I don't even
what
know.
What do bats, what's a bat house
I'm going to have to ask more questions about this, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to know more about, how well do you know these folks? Would they come on the air? That's pretty funny.
They might, actually, yeah.
Friend of the show, Keith the Plumber, messaged and said he thought killing bats was illegal because they'd eat so many mosquitoes. Like they are.
Interesting.
Mosquito vacuums bats, right?
Yeah.
And I know even, I think I've mentioned this before, but down south of here in Turner Valley, there's a church that has a bat house behind it. Like, it's like a bird house up on a stand. But it's clearly for bats. It's like marked with bat for bats.
Right.
And it's because they are such, well, they're pollinators and they,
yep,
they eat mosquitoes like crazy.
They also have rabies.
Well, that's what Keith said. This is Keith's message. A couple I know and I were chatting about bats and I said something offhand and she looked a bit wistful. And she said, my brother was the first recorded death from rabies in Alberta. He got it from a bat scratch. It barely touched him, and he didn't get it seen to and died.
That is horrifying.
Yeah.
And that is terrible. No.
From what I understand about a human death by rabies, it's incredibly rare, and it's not a good way to go.
No.
From what I've heard. So if you
just from a bat scratch, I know that is the thing. And Jill even said the same thing in front of the show message. She said she's terrified because she's like, those things have rabies, like they're super dangerous. So she's like, I'm afraid for your friends. But
and rabies in humans is not good.
No,
really not good. So
yeah. I was like, they could move. You know, I was like, maybe at some point it's time to move.
But the rent's cheap. This is the country we live in.
Yes.
Take your chance with rabies.
And let's be honest.
You don't have to go out in the rental market.
This is what we all did in college. Like, I lived in Harry Potter's closet for a while. I lived in a place that was so small, like, you could barely even walk down the hallway because, again, it was cheap and that's all I could afford. So I do understand it. Perhaps, though, the landlord should do something about it. Like, step in and maybe get a bat exterminator. I don't know if that's a thing, but...
Now, there's your problem. You got bats.
You got bats.
You don't say.
Bats in the walls. Bats everywhere.
Oh.
Ooh.
Bats are just nasty. I'd way rather have mice than bats.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. You know where you won't have bats?
In a new home from Shane Homes?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, unless you do something to draw the bats in, to attract the bats. When they turn the keys over to you, though, there won't be bats in that house.
No, no.
Pretty much guarantee that.
Yes, unless you bring them in yourself. Yeah.
I'll learn more about Shane Homes and their affordable customization program, which most of their customers take advantage of. Most of their customers do some sort of affordable customizing to the floor plan of their houses.
Your dream house. Got to make it your own.
ShaneHomes.com. Shane Homes.
It's a better way to build.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
Beckler, have you been following along with this Han Dong trial at all?
No, I haven't, Shauna, and I'm sad to admit that I didn't even really know it was going on. It hasn't been super well publicized,
or maybe
just haven't seen the stories yet, but because the whole election interference thing was a huge story when it initially happened.
Yes.
And this was a subset of that, right?
Totally. So this is a very Coles Notes version, very, very elementary here. But basically, he's a Liberal MP. He stepped down, and there's suspicion that he willingly participated in Chinese interference to help him win his seat back in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So the suspicion is that international students with fake addresses had been bussed into the riding and forced to vote for him, and they were basically being threatened that they'd lose their student visas if they didn't. And then he allegedly went to this school and convinced the students to sign up, and then he says he didn't, but then he said he actually did, but it was for different reasons and the school paid to bring him in. And a lot of conflicting stuff.
I hope the truth comes out in this trial, because I remember when this happened, you and I said on the air that, I mean, if the allegations are true, it's borderline treasonous behavior.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not true, what a horrible allegation to have to wear for him.
Totally.
So yeah. I hope we get to the bottom of this.
And I watched this quick clip of the trial, and this is just... So, of course, he's being interrogated. He's on the stand. There's a lawyer asking him some questions. And the whole thing just, it terrifies me, because then I took myself and away from it a little bit and said, imagine being in his spot where you're getting interrogated like this. I don't think I could do it, because these lawyers are so good at what they do, and you just crack. And not to mention, you have to be so careful how you say things. Mm-hmm. And there's this giant pause at the beginning. I have a little clip here. Just listen to this. And it just makes me so uncomfortable.
Do you accept that the People's Republic of China is attempting to interfere in Canadian democracy?
So this is the pause.
I've seen reports about that. I personally haven't seen any evidence of it.
So you don't accept it, or you do?
I've never personally seen any evidence of it.
That's not the question I asked you. I haven't seen any evidence of it personally myself. But we have very serious allegations, and we're all here because every federal political party agreed that a judge needed to be appointed to investigate these very issues. So I'll ask you again. Do you accept
that it's possible? It's possible.
It's possible. All right.
Oh,
I'm sweating for him.
Just honestly, when you hear that.
That's like, the hot seat if I've ever seen one.
Holy crap. Like, you and I have had to testify about something. And I remember being, and we didn't have anything to hide. And I started just, I was sweating. It was to the point where they ask you these questions, and they make you question your own truth, right?
Yeah.
You start to think that what you're saying is lying, even though you thought that it was true before.
Like you said, the time that we had to testify, it wasn't us who were being accused.
No. Nope.
And it's still like, they can twist you in knots.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're like, man, do I remember what happened?
Seriously.
Or let alone something as grave as this.
Like, I'm actually sweating. I have goose. I'm sweating right now listening to that. And they, oh!
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
You're a bit of a wordsmith, Shauna. With etymology with Shauna, yeah. You look into the origin of words. Yeah, you appreciate language.
Yeah, I do, yes.
A wordsmith. Mm-hmm. Have you ever taken a good look at the word remuneration? And I think I said that correctly.
Yeah, that word is annoying.
It's backwards, isn't it?
You'd want it to be remuneration.
Yes.
It's remuneration. I know.
It's tax season right now.
Yeah.
And I saw that come up in some of the tax documents we were looking at. My brother pointed this out recently. He's like, the word doesn't make sense. Remuneration. No. Like, you would think, yeah, remuneration is in like numerals, mm-hmm. numbers.
Yep.
And now I'm wondering if I've ever said this word the wrong way.
Probably, because again, it makes no sense. It looks like somebody with dyslexia wrote that word. That's
yes.
what happened. Okay. Somebody frigged up and put it backwards, and then we just stuck with it. We're like, too late now.
Like Dwayne Wade's name.
Yep.
It's got the same thing going on as Dwayne Wade's name.
It's honestly, it's just, yeah, somebody messed up. You're just like, no.
If I've ever used that word in a sentence while trying to sound smart before,
that would be embarrassing.
No, would it ever? I wonder if I've ever said it on the air. Well, you know, we're talking about the remuneration. People are like, that's
an idiot. No, the idiot is the person who dyslexia'd the word to begin with, okay?
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I don't know if you saw this, but Mariah and Ty, of X Afternoons, of course, posted about how Noah Kahan went to iFly when he was
I
in
saw
town.
That. Yeah.
Which is awesome. And I was thinking about that, and I wonder if his people seek out cool or unique experiences for him to do on every tour stop. You know what
well,
I mean?
If you look at his social media accounts, he's yeah. posting what he's doing in each city, and it looks like he's very much like
that's
trying to get
doing.
Out and do stuff. Like in Edmonton, he went for a skate at some rink, it looks
oh,
like
nice.
With his crew, and then did I fly here? He was spotted.
Did he get a 50-50 ticket in Edmonton? Because that's the big thing to do there,
the
right?
The full Edmonton experience.
That's it. Just go and get a 50-50 ticket. You're good.
He was spotted at Native Tongues when he was here, too,
right.
I think.
Yeah, I did see that, too, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I wondered if that was maybe because this is his first, like, big-time tour.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a band that's done a world tour mm-hmm. a dozen times, and you're just like, get me to my hotel and the show and then back home. Whereas like he's probably really loving it.
Although on the other hand, I was thinking about that and I'm like, I mean, especially he's kind of a solo musician. Like he travels with a band, but from what I gather, his band kind of came later, right? Mm-hmm. They're almost like backing musicians.
Yep.
I was like, how lonely would it be to go on one of these year-long tours on your own, essentially, like that.
He has his dog with him,
okay,
which
great.
Is pretty cool.
That's nice. But if you don't have your family traveling with you, and I know, obviously, like, musicians will try and make a point of bringing their family out when they can, but it would be super lonely. Like, you'd want to have things to do or to get into the city and do something, you'd think.
I think so. I've always thought that.
Yeah.
If I went on a tour, I'd want to see as much of the city as I could. And I know sometimes artists will complain that you don't get a lot of time to do that.
Yeah.
But
when you do, though,
again, I think it's probably just like how novel this all is to him. Like,
yeah.
He's playing arenas where everybody knows his music, and then he gets to check out the city during the day, whereas, like, if you've done it a million times.
I suppose so. And, I mean, he's still fairly, you know, people don't see him and know exactly who he is just
That's
yet.
True.
He's not fairly recognizable, which is also nice, because we've also talked about that. Some of the musicians, like Justin Bieber, for example, they can't leave the hotel room. They will get absolutely swarmed. So for them, you basically have to hold yourself away.
One of the Beatles talked about that.
Yeah.
They said when they toured the world, like, they never saw any of it because they couldn't leave the hotel or they'd get mobbed.
That would be the end of it for me. If I was a musician that got to that fame where I couldn't even leave the hotel room, I'd be like, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I do is I just get a whole bunch of disguises, like really well done one, like the fake noses and the full on thing, and then make it a thing to just be a different persona in every city I was in, like completely transform myself and go out anyway. Because if you had to sit in a hotel room, like, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Or tell whoever's booking the tour, your manager, like, find me places where there aren't going to be a lot of people.
I suppose so.
Know who I am.
And I'll put my fake nose on and then we'll be good.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast. Beckler and Shauna's Career Day.
Well, if you're listening to this, I'm guessing that you also enjoy live music. And anytime you go to a live show, someone had to put that show together. Someone had to book the talent and promote it. And our Career Day guest today is a friend of ours and a guy that we've worked with as a radio station before. You want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Tim Renziogu. I'm currently a promoter, talent buyer for a company called Moto Live.
How do you decide what bands you're going to represent or promote? Like, how do you pick and choose? Or is it just basically everybody at this point that comes to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bit of both. I mean, like, you know, there's bands that you've been working with for, you know, 10 plus years. You know, I've been working with, like, the different iterations of a band, like Pup, since I was, you know...
A young pup?
Yeah, sure. We'll use that. But other bands like Dirty Mill, who, you know, same thing, you know, since was when they were playing basements, hanging around and buzz with those dudes. So part of it's, like, you know, relationship-based people that, you know on a personal level. And,
right. You
know, you just kind of remain involved in your small way in their growth. You're more of a bystander for bands like Pup, who are obviously crushing it in a really, really big way. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in terms of like intake of bands kind of coming in, a lot of that has to do with, you know, you have like relationships that you've cultivated over the years with certain agents and managers. And, you know, obviously there's a trust that gets developed between those two parties. They'll basically come to you and say, hey, you know, I just signed this new artist. Would you like to do it? And then there's a financial exchange that is agreed upon. You know, most agents don't want to see promoters lose money, so they're pretty realistic about, you know, what they project their artists to kind of sell to. And obviously they work with competitors, but, you know, given the amount of volume and touring, you know, Canada, there's only a finite amount of companies that actually do the national kind of level touring. So, you know, it's usually a jump ball between Moto, like MRG, Live Nation, and F7.
It seems like promoting a show would be incredibly stressful. Like, are you always worried that you're going to lose your shirt?
It's definitely glorified gambling.
Yeah.
You know, I love actually going to the casino, so it's probably a reflection of my line of work as well, but, or the connection back to it. But I've done a bunch of like panels and stuff, and you know, when you're an independent promoter, it's a little bit more pronounced because it's definitely like a eat what you kill kind of.
Like, is it your own money that you're putting up?
Yeah, like I did that for probably about 5 years.
Okay,
for the first 5 years where. It was like, yeah, like, you know, I remember doing a show for a band that was highly touted and had recently won, like, a really big award in Canada. And I was like, oh, they'll do fine in St. Catharines and, I think like 100 people showed up, and I had to like call my parents to like send me money, or else I was going to get like my ankles broken. So it was like, you know, it's like there's situations like that. But like what I always tell like younger people coming into the industry is like the best way to know if you can do it is like take all your life savings and put them on the sidewalk and douse them in gasoline and light it on fire. And if you can walk away from that and be okay with it, then you'll probably have the mental fortitude to become a concert promoter, because it does feel like that at times. You know, very streaky. Sometimes you have like, you know, a week of really good shows and you're on top of the world, and then you get humbled really quickly with a couple of really bad ones.
What's the most amount of money you've had to put out for a show?
Personally?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Personally, like in terms of like when I was doing it myself and not working for a company, I think I lost like $7,000 in one night. So.
And what about with a company?
It's like pushing into like the 50s, 60s.
Ooh.
So. Oh. Yeah, I won't say which show that was. But no. I remember like the show happening, and I was like really, really bummed out, because I really believed in what was going on with that artist at the time. And, I had my resignation letter ready to go that night. So I was like, I'm going to need to look for a new job. I got my resume ready. Like I did everything. And I'm like, I'm going to lose my job. And then I will give credit to if the person's listening to this, I will give credit to that person. But they basically were like, did you learn anything from this loss? And I was like, yeah. They're like, okay, good.
Wow.
What did you learn from the loss? Like what are the factors that make a bust like that happen?
I was trying to like, kind of toe this line of like shows in that genre that were doing really well. I came in really aggressive, like really hot on the artists when, you know, I kind of ignored some key kind of performance indicators or KPIs that were like definitely telling me not to do that. But, I since then, I don't think I've really lose that much on shows, like if I do lose at all. So,
well, it must be tough to separate yourself from the art, because I know you're a music fan, but you promote a very wide range of shows.
Yeah, you're not servicing yourself and your interests, right? Yeah. There's obviously some bands, like I've mentioned, like, you know, one of my favorite bands in the entire world is the Dirty No. Like, I think they're incredible. But, and, you know, like Pup's on that list, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of bands that I'm just, like, super grateful to, you know, have this, like, small involvement in. But 90% of the bands that you work with, you know, they're new to me, just as they're new to some other people. It's not about booking what you like.
And I was going to say, it's not about booking your favorite band, but that would be so tough not to do.
It's the one that's going to make money,
well,
right?
Yeah. I mean, like a lot of the bands I like too, you know, it's like I love Bruce Springsteen. It's like, I will never book Bruce Springsteen. that's just never going to happen. You know, you kind of cultivate these relationships over the years, and you know, some of these bands that you just get introduced to become, you know, dear friends and, you know, close colleagues. And it's interesting because, yeah, you're servicing, like, the community at large.
Yeah, like, right? A need in the market.
Yeah, need in the market, or, you know, the data shows that, you know, they have a lot of streams. And
I was about to say, what data in particular do you look for to see what might be a good booking?
Yeah, I mean, there's there's Spotify, obviously. There's radio. What you guys do is obviously super important. There's, you know, touring data, like if they've come in through with a headliner, especially a headliner that's like done those bigger rooms, that usually has a lot to do with it. You know, similar markets, similar demographics, like if they're doing, you know, if they're an American band, you know, playing a sister city to Calgary with, you know, that also has a lot of, you know, oil and gas and trucks. Like that artist will also do well in a city like Calgary.
Interesting.
And sometimes it's like an educational kind of a piece as well when promoting those shows.
Timur, two-part question here. Who has been your favorite group to work with other than the ones you've mentioned already, and who has been the most difficult artist to work with?
Well, I'm not going to answer the most difficult question.
Oh, I thought I could get you.
There's always like difficulties with shows. I don't think one's more difficult than the other. Everyone kind of just wants the same thing. So they want a good show for them, a safe show for their fans, and no kind of like negative energy. So It's like, if you can do those three, most, I would say like 99.9% of the bands are usually pretty happy and grateful that you're there and supporting their careers in your own way. So I wouldn't say anyone really sticks out in like the negative. And I know that sounds really like politically neutral, but...
Well, I mean, I get it. You're all professionals, right?
Yeah.
Any odd requests on riders that you've seen come through or anything like that?
The first time I saw like a 12-pack of clean socks, I didn't understand.
12-pack of clean socks?
Yeah, I went on a tour and I was like, oh, I get it.
It's because showers are hard to come by, so you need at least the clean socks, okay?
Yeah, you need those creature comforts of some clean socks, you know? And anytime someone buys you socks, you know they're better than the socks you're going to buy for yourself, so I get it.
That's
my
true.
My favorite band to work with... This is, again, they're like, you know, like one of my favorite bands, but I did a Sloan show, about a year or so ago, and one of the dudes from Kids in the Hall showed up and did a song with Sloan, and I was like, this is sick. So that's probably one of my favorite, like, more recent memories.
Yeah.
Probably the memory that I hold really close to me, the company I worked for pre-pandemic did a show for Blondie in Toronto.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
And my mom and I used to, like, I grew up listening to Blondie and, like, Rod Stewart and, you know, Loverboy and Bruce Springsteen and all these other 70s and 80s bands. And the company did a show for Blondie, and it was, like, the first time that, like, my parents kind of, like, understood what I did. So that's, like, a core memory.
Cool.
That, like, so I was able to, like, you know, bring my mom to the show, and she, like, came backstage, and I was like, that's the singer of Blondie standing right there. Don't talk to her, please. But she's right there. And, you know, this is cool, right? And she's like, yeah, I'm sick. So that was like a cool memory for me. Yeah, I haven't, you know, culturally, though, like, I haven't really worked with any Turkish artists yet, so that's going to probably be the next one when I have someone from, like, my background that I get to work with.
That's okay. Cool.
You know, actually kind of hang out with.
Where do you see the industry going? Because I know that, you know, concert ticket prices are up, your costs are up on the other end.
Yeah.
What does the future of live music look like?
I think it's a tough one. I mean, there's definitely like a condensing that's definitely happening in our industry. There's not a lot of like true independents that are left, like I kind of mentioned. There's only like a handful of these companies kind of doing this. And we're all kind of like buddy-buddy with each other. And, you know, not that the same, there's like any sort of like insider trader happening. There's nothing like that happening. There's definitely one company that's in control and, you know, that we kind of, the rest kind of follow along. But, in terms of like long-term ways, you know, I would hope that there's like a push to more independence. I know that's easier said than actually done. I think the pandemic definitely affected like younger kids kind of getting into the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely has like a really downward pressure on like venues and their ability to remain profitable. Obviously cost of living has gone up. The people's like expendable incomes, like, you know, at the end of the day, all we are is entertainment, right?
Right.
You know, we're not, you know, changing the world. We're not out there, you know, saving people's lives or, you know,
we can appreciate that, Timmer.
We're putting on rock and roll shows. Like that's all we're kind of doing here, right? So, that was the hardest thing during the pandemic for someone like me. That's like my enjoying fulfillment is not actually the work per se. Like the work is easily transferable to whatever I do. It's basically just project management and, you know, micro accounting. You know, I think the payoff for a lot of people in our industry was, you do all this work behind the, you know, computer screen, and then eventually you walk into a room, you go in and you say, hey, this is cool because I had like a small part in this. And like that went away. And I think like a lot of people who kind of survived that that whole thing are really steadfast in their commitment to, like, you know, providing these shows like continually. I don't think like they're ever going to really go away. You know, there's a lot of people who are taking their jobs for granted or taking their, you know, their roles for granted,
mm-hmm.
really had kind of like a self-reflection moment in those 2 years where we couldn't do anything. We're all very grateful that we're still being able to do this, you know, and we're very mindful as well of like the pressures that people face. The costs are going up, you know, ticket fees are going up like crazy, obviously, but there's always going to be, you know, shows at these small rooms in town, you know, with a lot of really cool artists playing. whether it's at, you know, Dickens or Modern Love or the Palomino or Commonwealth or Palace or Mack Hall or Ballroom or any of the theaters. Like, you know, there's, it's not always just about the bands that are playing at the arenas, and there's a large network of people doing a lot of really cool things.
Two things for you. For those who, I mean, people who are listening are passionate about music here, so if we want to keep this live music thing going, what, give us some advice. What can we do to support? And also, if you're a band, where can they go if they are looking for a promoter?
Like a local band?
Yeah.
There's a lot of in-house bookings that happen in the Prairie provinces just out of, like, necessity.
Yeah.
We obviously will never say no to working with any artist. I think, like, the best piece of advice I could give to an artist is just, you know, understand your worth to the economics of a show, and, you know, understand what it means to be put on a show, you know, so, you know, you're not, like, self-cannibalizing, you know, your draw at a specific show, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about putting bodies in a room.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, you know, we're always open to chatting with any local artists. We've worked with a bunch. Especially in Calgary, and, you know, a bunch of it get played on X on, I believe, what's it, Sunday evenings. So, on exposure. So, and then in terms of, like, the average fan, like I said, you know, I would always just recommend to people to kind of step outside of their comfort zone. And, you know, if they hear of a show, if their friends are going to a show and they haven't heard of the band, people being in a room and watching something is something we almost lost. And that's, like, a very wholesome kind of a thing for a lot of people. I don't know if I'm phrasing that correctly, but, you know, it's to me, it's like, that's the payoff for me. And I assume it's the payoff for a lot of people after, you know, a bad week at work or, you know, a bad week personally. You know, it's like going into a room of like-minded people and, you know, hearing some songs. It's always something that, you know, cheers me up, and I hope it cheers other people up. And I would highly recommend to, you know, whether it's a show at the Dome or a show at, you know, one of the smaller rooms in Calgary. I think it's a super important part of our city and our, you know, our economy and our, and, like, you know, culture on a whole. So
Timur Inciaoglu is a talent buyer and promoter for Moto Live. He books the shows you love to see. Timur, thank you for your time.
I appreciate you guys thinking about me.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
An Alberta Heritage Moment.
Alberta has plenty of strange attractions, whether it's the world's largest Pasanka egg in Vegreville or the Star Trek theme of Vulcan, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a stranger tourist attraction than the one in Torrington, Alberta.
Torrington has a population of just 200 people, yet 10,000 visitors descend upon the town during the four summer months to see the famous Gopher Hole Museum. Yes, Torrington has a world-famous Gopher Hole Museum.
The museum is exactly as it sounds, filled with gophers. Taxidermied gophers, that is, are all on display in different dioramas meant to represent different places within the town itself. Some of the gophers are even said to be spitting images of the town's people themselves, like the postmaster, for instance.
How this began? Well, it was meant as a way to attract tourism to Torrington at a time when the population was dwindling. In 1991, a plan was put in place to revitalize the town's economy and to refresh its image. Torrington had a bit of a gopher problem, so the town mascot became Clem T. Gopher, a life-sized gopher.
Some say it was Phyllis at a town hall meeting who suggested they make lemonade out of lemons by taking the town's plentiful gopher population and taxidermy them. And from there, a plan was born.
The local ladies designed the dioramas and dressed the gophers using some Barbie props and some homemade costumes. And the number of dioramas slowly grew. There are now 44 different scenes that use 77 different gophers.
One diorama takes place in the town diner, which is an exact replica of the real thing. Another is set in the post office. They truly are a reflection of Torrington in real life. And the town has fully embraced the gophers, even decorating their fire hydrants to look like the little rodents. You can actually do a gopher fire hydrant scavenger hunt if you ask the museum for it.
Although the stuffed gophers haven't exactly turned Torrington's economy around, perhaps in part because admission is still only $2 and the owners are strict on that never changing, the Gopher Hole Museum has certainly put Torrington on the map. Who knew a stuffed gopher could be so popular?
This has been an Alberta Heritage Moment.
You've been listening to the Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
You want more? Then tune in to X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna live on Calgary's Alternative, X92.9. Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time at x92.9.ca. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and have Beckler and Shauna downloaded daily to whatever device you use. Later.